Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it was a tremendous week again this week. How about you?
Had a great week. What about you, Z? Butch, how was your week?
Z? I got Z's here. Make sure he's late. Yeah. Mine was a fantastic week. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I had a productive week, and that's pretty good. I had a more productive week than the Mayweather-Pacquiao negotiators. How about that?
Can you believe that?
Yes, I can.
It just seems to go from bad to worse.
The funny thing is that Bob Arum always comes out with a statement, and then within a matter of days, that statement is always proven to be false.
Right.
At one time, he said that Manny Pacquiao had signed the contract and he had sent it over to Floyd Mayweather and they were just waiting for Floyd to sign. About a week later, he comes out and says, hey, we're just waiting for the TV networks to agree and then we'll sign a contract. So we realized that initial statement was false. He just recently came out and said, hey, the TV stations, Showtime and HBO, have agreed to a deal. And then Showtime's president of sports, Steven Espinosa, came out and said, no, we haven't agreed to a deal yet. There's still many issues to be hammered out. We haven't even agreed to a deal. So Bob Arum is, you know, he kind of jumps the gun a little bit. I don't know if it's, you know, a smear tactic to make Floyd look like he is trying to hold up the fight or if it's just that he gets a little excited whenever he gets a little good news. But for whatever reason, though, he's really – the main person who's leading the media and the boxing public into believing the fight is actually closer than it is to being made, even though it's closer to being made than it was, you know, than it's ever been in the last 5 years.
Right. And Bob Arum also came out and said that it seems to go better when he says nothing, and which kind of doesn't make sense to me because even in saying that, he's saying something. So it seems he has to open his mouth about everything.
Sure. All the press is jumping on Arum now, you know, and saying the same thing we are. So I'm not going to make it any longer. But I think the funny thing is that everybody now is watching to see just what's going to happen. Who is Floyd going to pick for his next fight? Because there's a lot of guys waiting out there that want a shot at Floyd. And will
well,
he make
it?
Go ahead.
The funny thing is that's the biggest thing. I think from a demand perspective, there's always going to be demand for that fight as long as these two guys are fighting on a world-class level. But the demand that was there 5 years ago is not quite there anymore. Don't get it wrong. Still going to be the biggest fight in history if it gets made. But the boxing public, we've been through it so many times with these guys, we're no longer itching or craving or yearning for this fight. We understand that there are other great fights coming on the horizon, like our friend Keith Thurman against, you know, Guerrero, and,
right,
you know, and Andre Berto against Josecito Lopez and Peterson against Garcia. So we as boxing fans know that, you know, there's a huge fights on the landscape. So we aren't, I don't think we're craving Mayweather-Pacquiao as much as we would have been 5 years ago. With that being said, what it does do, though, is it holds up a lot of fighters because you have a Miguel Cotto, you have an Amir Khan. For a while, you had Canelo Alvarez. All these guys are kind of waiting to the side to see what Mayweather and Pacquiao are going to do because they know they could be the B-side to a Mayweather or a Pacquiao. So a lot of these guys that was huge speculation that that's why Miguel Cotto didn't fight Canelo because he thought he could end up being in the ring with Mayweather. Amir Khan has been holding out with negotiating with anyone else because he's waiting for the fallout from Pacquiao and Mayweather. So it is holding up the division somewhat.
Now, if Pacquiao Mayweather ever did happen, you have to think of boxing afterward. What's the landscape of fighting going to be after these two guys face off? Because they're going to be done after that. They're not going to be really.
Right.
They're still kind of a shell of themselves to me right now. So even after they fight each other, that's they're not going to be any better than that. You know, they're on a downhill decline. So, I mean, what is it going to be? You're going to have matchups to where people, you know, are really good. They're going to start facing each other. I like what Al Heyman's doing. He's creating a landscape of boxing to where there are going to be good matchups, where you're not focused so much on that Floyd Pacquiao type thing because you already have these young, hungry guys good guys, guys with skill, that are facing off against each other. So,
well, you know, Ty, you had said something about Mikal Kessler. There was something come out on Twitter that he said there's a possibility that he was going to retire. Have you seen that yet?
Yes, he actually did go ahead and announce his retirement. I believe it was Thursday.
Yeah.
There were no meaningful fights for him on the horizon. As we all know, he was trying to get Andre Ward back in the ring for a rematch or a rubber match with Carl Froch. None of those fights interest either guy right now for obvious reasons at this point in time. And so, Mikal Kessler is not necessarily at the point in his career like a Carl Froch. He's not, you know, necessarily looking to take on the young lions anymore. He wants a big fight. He wants his victory lap, which, you know, guys like Kessler and Froch, who, you know, constantly put themselves, you know, in harm's way fighting top-notch competition and fought at a world-class level, they kind of deserve their swan song fight, and that's what he was looking for. And it just never materialized. It never manifested. So, you know, again, he doesn't seem to be able to get that motivation up for a no-name, so to speak, opponent. So he's going to go ahead and sit it out. And you can't blame him. I think he's great. He's had a honorable career.
Sure. And the other person we had talked about last week, Jermaine Taylor, and I see that the IBF now has vacated his title, and they're going to open that up for a belt fight. Have you seen that?
Yeah, they're looking to match, I believe, Felix Sturm, and maybe is it Billy Joe Saunders, I'm thinking? It could be Billy Joe Saunders because I know he just beat Chris Eubank Jr., so maybe Billy Joe Saunders, but I know Felix Sturm is in the running to fight for that vacant belt. You know what? We sit on this radio show every Saturday and we criticize the alphabet titles. You know, I want to give kudos to the IBF for making the right moral and probably legal decision in stripping Jermaine Taylor. Obviously, he is, you know, going to be in no position to defend the title anytime soon. So,
I think Sturm is supposed to fight Ndam.
It is Ndam. You're right.
If I'm correct.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you. It is Ndam. And they're going to fight for the vacant belt.
That should be a pretty good fight. I mean,
sure.
Felix Sturm is technically better than Ndam, but Ndam, he offers some weapons that could give Sturm some problems. He's an active guy.
Go ahead, Z. I'm sorry.
Oh. Ndam's an active guy who could, he uses his feet at times. He tends to try to bombs away from range, but he has a pretty good jab, and he will move.
Yeah, you know, at this stage of Felix Sturm's career, he's hot and cold. He's had some. We all know his. You know, he's had his belt saved by the German officials over there several times in the judging. But then he's come back and, you know, put on a good performance here and there. So he's hot and cold. But at the tail end of his career, it could be right for, you know, for a guy like Ndam to get him. Not saying that he will, but it could be. However, at this stage, I would have favored either guy to have beaten Jermaine Taylor, though.
I'm sorry, Z. I wanted to let everybody know that we're joined by the newly refreshed and always so inimitable Dr. Chris Panarella.
He's back.
Hey guys, I'm well rested. I'm ready to listen to a lot of knowledge tonight.
I had a great trip.
I was in Puerto Rico. I had a fantastic time. The weather was great, but I did not know the results of the Deontay Wilder fight. It wasn't on television. You would think, you know, in Puerto Rico, what a fight place it is. I didn't know. So I said, I'm going to just keep looking at television. I had to call home to find out who won.
Yep.
So, and then I heard, and then Frank told me that the Deontay gave him pacing, man, knocked him around.
Yes, he did.
I didn't see the fight yet. I haven't even seen a rerun.
Yes, sir.
That's what happened.
That's what happened.
Yep.
Did it surprise you guys? I mean, I thought
Dr. Chris.
I thought Stavern was going to give him a more a better battle than that.
Yeah,
you know?
It looked like Deontay, he used his range very well, used his feet well. More importantly, it seemed that he settled Stiverne down with his power early. And Stiverne didn't just kind of lazily chase him around with a high guard doing nothing. I mean, Deontay, he went about his business, throwing his jab. Nice jab. Was going in between the guard a lot. He would time him with the 1-2, and then he would use his feet to kind of stare him out. Deontay took some pretty good shots, too. Not many, but he got hit a few times, and he took them well.
Did he ever tag Deontay Wilder at all?
Yes, a few times. Not many, but
a few times.
Deontay took them well.
Right. Okay, good. Good. Well, he's got somewhat of a chin then, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, he might be able to give the Russian a good fight then.
A little early. Yeah, he called out Tyson Fury.
There's nobody left for him to fight.
That fell through, but there were talks about that. That will be an interesting fight.
Well, what about Klitschko? I understand he's coming to this country to fight Jennings.
Yeah, he's fighting Brian Jennings at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. I believe April. I forget the date, but in April.
What's Jennings weighing now? 220?
Yeah, I believe so.
Or less.
6'3", 220. Yeah, he's like 220, 225.
He's awful small.
Yeah, April 25th, Klitschko is going to be fighting at the Barclays Center.
Somebody's fighting on April 18th, too, because I was confusing the Klitschko date with an April 18th date as well.
You guys think he has a chance against Klitschko?
Dr. Chris, you know as well as anybody, Dr. Chris, anybody with two fists stands a chance. Outside of that.
That's going to be it. That poor Jennings,
and Brian Jennings is from right around, you know, right up the street. He's a Philly guy, so he's not too far from you. But so we got to wish him luck. But you know,
but the poor guy.
And he's, you know, he's small. And he's compared to Klitschko, he's a small guy, but he's not a big puncher either. So
I know. That's why
he's really going to have to try to outbox and outwork Vladimir, which is very difficult, giving Vladimir's use of his range and his jab. Very difficult.
Well, the problem is he's not exceptionally quicker than Klitschko. He's not stronger. And, I mean, footwork, he doesn't have faster or more educated feet. And he doesn't have more boxing skill necessarily than Klitschko.
Klitschko
is also
more technically and fundamentally the sound fighter as well, Zito.
Yes. So I don't understand.
Doing it much longer.
I don't see where Jennings has a shot outside of a puncher's chance, which anyone has.
Or a good headbutt.
You
know?
I don't know.
He doesn't hold his head like that at all. He doesn't even
fight that style. He's not a headbutter.
Oh, no. He doesn't like fists touching his face, so a head's not going to get close to him.
What makes Vladimir Klitschko so difficult to beat is he's a physically formidable guy anyway, but he has a very formidable boxing style from a defensive standpoint. And because of his size and the way he's able to use his range, add to that his boxing skills, what it does is it only really gives most of his opponents only one path to victory against him. You're not going to outbox him. You're not going to outwork him. What you can do, possibly, is pressure him and get inside and get him out of there, hopefully. But outside of that, there's not a lot of different paths to victory for this guy. A quicker guy is not going to be able to use his speed to beat him because Vladimir is just going to use his range to negate the speed as well as his exceptional timing. So even if you're stronger, you're not necessarily going to lean on him because he's not going to let you get close enough. So unless you're Joe Frazier, who can, unless you're Joe Frazier, prepared to go for 15 and prepare to bob and weave for 15, then maybe you can go ahead and fight a Vladimir Klitschko, and if you don't hurt him, you don't get him out of there. But maybe I couldn't even see him being outworked, because he'll do like he did to Povetkin. He'll just grab you, lay on you, and you wear your tank out. So against a guy like Vladimir Klitschko, the only path to victory is to get inside and, you know, catch him with something big. And, you know, when you only give one guy a path to, you know, a guy one path to victory against a world-class fighter, it gets a little difficult. And as you see, it gets redundant to watch to a certain extent.
Yeah. Last night they interviewed Deontay Wilder on the fight show that they had last night. He's pretty good conversationalist. Talks a nice game. He's more likable, than most fighters.
Very engaging. Very engaging.
Good word. Well, I liked the guy last night. He's not in any big hurry. He said, yeah, I want a title, but I don't consider myself a heavyweight champion yet. He said, when I fight Klitschko, he said he's been offered talk with two guys. He's probably going to take the lesser of the two. The survey shows everybody wants to see him fight Klitschko, but I don't think he's too anxious. I think he's willing to wait a little bit. So it's going to be interesting, but before we can see what Klitschko's really made of, we're going to have to wait until somebody his size gets in the ring with him.
I think Deontay Wilder, even though he's very confident in himself, I think he's also humble enough to know that he has work to do. He knows he just picked up boxing 9.5-10 years ago. He himself knows he's not a finished product. I think part of his confidence comes from what he's able to do in just the short time he's been doing it. But I think he's very, aware and realistic to the fact that he has the athleticism to challenge Klitschko, but he does not have the experience or anything nature to challenge Klitschko yet. He knows that.
Yep. I think you're right there. I don't think he's got the he needs another fight against somebody that kind of boosts him up a little bit.
Exactly.
Boosts his confidence. You know? That everybody he's fought, he's knocked out, and he's fought about two fights ago, he fought a real poor opponent and didn't do good against him. Didn't look good at all.
Jason Gavern, I remember that. Yeah.
I think a good fight for him right now would be a David Price.
Ooh.
Just to gauge as far as the Klitschko size, generally a long guy who has pretty good boxing skill.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, David
I know who they mentioned. Yeah, they mentioned Fury.
Tyson Fury.
They mentioned him as an opponent. What's his name? What's his Fury?
Tyson Fury.
Tyson Fury.
Fury. Yeah.
You know, again,
the big guy. He's a big guy. Damn near as big as Deontay. He's about 6'6".
Any knowledgeable boxing fan would love to see Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder just for the promotion alone. Because those two guys are going to have you in stitches laughing at sound bites and claims of being the greatest ever since sliced bread was invented. With that said, we all know, and we just spoke about how Vladimir Klitschko is defending against Brian Jennings. Tyson Fury is the mandatory to Vladimir Klitschko. He's already said that he's not necessarily – first he said he would decapitate Deontay Wilder. However, he's looking to fight Klitschko. He wants his shot. He's ready to take that fight. Tyson Fury does present Klitschko with an interesting challenge. He's bigger than Vladimir Klitschko. And Tyson Fury has really developed his boxing skills over these last 4 years. He's learned to really manage the ring. And he has a very good jab. He has pretty quick hands, and he's pretty fluid for a guy that big. He's not a lumbering guy. And, I could see him giving Vladimir Klitschko some trouble, some instances. The problem with Tyson Fury is, from an athletic standpoint, he is nowhere near the athlete that Vladimir Klitschko is. And he also is not the better boxer. Vladimir Klitschko is still a better technical and fundamental boxer. Vladimir hits significantly harder. Tyson's not a huge puncher. Obviously, we know, Vladimir Klitschko doesn't have Jake LaMotta in his beard. But at the same time, Tyson Fury is not an imposing puncher. He hits hard, he's not an imposing puncher.
When's the last time you saw Tyson Fury fight?
A few months ago.
Fight once.
He just fought a few months ago. He fought Derek Chisora, for the second time, and Chisora showed up in shape. But what Tyson Fury did is he moved around the ring. He threw a great jab all night, put combinations together. He didn't sit down on a lot of his punches. He kept it moving. And you know what? It was funny, Zito. I started to text you. After I watched the fight, I said Tyson Fury went ahead and fought Derek Chisora, and it looked almost like a poor man's Ali Frazier, because Fury was moving the way Fury, if Fury was trying to emulate Ali to a certain extent, that's what I saw. He was moving. He was flashing combinations. He was showboating, pot-shotting, spinning Chisora around, wrapping him up, pushing him back, firing off combinations, and staying out of harm's way. I mean, he really fought a good tactical fight.
Did he get a new trainer? Or is our
same guy?
No, same guy, but I think what people forget, Tyson Fury is such a big guy. When he first came on the scene, he was like 21 years old, so he's only like 27. You know what I mean? So this guy's really just entering his prime. And at the same time, his craft has finally started to come together to where it can work for him and not betray him like the time he uppercutted himself in the face, which is still on YouTube for those who want to see.
And I think Tyson Fury, he's always going to do good against brawlers or smaller guys.
Mm-hmm.
He's always,
oh, yeah.
Because as big as he is, he's not afraid to step in generally. Against Chisora, he has the skill to and the size to go ahead and steer him around and shoot at him when he wants. I think the problem would be against a Klitschko. He would give Klitschko problems because he's not afraid to fight on the inside. And he has the range to get there. And he'll go ahead and beat Klitschko up a bit on the inside. His problem would be he'll be sleeping and not too long because he gets hit too clean. And
you know what the funny
though,
thing is? Every
you get
time
hit
I think
clean
I...
a few times or once, I mean, he's going to put Fury out.
Zito, every time I think, because Tyson Fury, he's a tough son of a bitch. Every time I think of Tyson Fury against Vladimir Klitschko, you know what fight guys keeps rewinding in my mind? Every time you say the two names together, I think of Holmes and Cooney. And I don't know if it'll last that long, but it's going to look a lot like that. It's going to look a lot like Holmes and Cooney.
Not as clean. Holmes is extremely clean with that.
Yep.
It's going to be a little sloppy.
Cooney's trainer threw him in too soon. He only had about 15 fights when he fought.
But just the way Jerry Cooney fell, that's how Tyson Fury would fall. Just like that. Legs, arms, everything in there.
Young and green. You know,
it's not going to be the beating. It's not going to be that beating. It's going to be a lot sooner.
Clean, and it'll be sooner, but it'll be that type of fight where you see the smaller guy just technically sharper. And you know what? And just staring the bigger guy and running him into the shots that eventually kill him.
The clean shots.
It's just that I think Vladimir Klitschko will pull the curtain a little quicker.
Yeah, it's too hard.
When Cooney fought Holmes, he had no idea how. I mean, he was owned by a dentist from Long Island, and the guy couldn't wait for that big payday. Instead of bringing Cooney along, pushed him too soon. And Holmes was a smart fighter, but he hurt Holmes a couple of times. But he didn't believe that he had Holmes hurt, you know. And then after that, his just career went downhill. A week or two, in a sparring session, Carmen Graziano called me. He said, "Cooney's a killer with his left hook." He said he just made two of my pretty good sparring partners, pretty good heavyweights, quit. They don't want to fight anymore. I said, "He hit that hard." He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, but he don't know what the hell he's doing, you know." He never had the experience. I'm thinking the same lines along Tyson Fury. How many fights has he had?
He's had 20.
He hasn't had that many, has he?
Fight. No, he's had over. Excuse me, he's had over 20 fights.
He does?
Yeah, he has like 24, 25 fights, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Hey, he went 15. I mean, he hung in there almost the whole fight. That's a shame. I hate to see guys push too early. And careers ended.
Again, Tyson Fury is 27, so he could easily get a couple more years before he could fight for the title. But in as thin as the heavyweight division is, and as unmarketable.
There's nobody there.
Yeah, So all of a sudden, you get guy, like Brian Jennings is fighting for in my opinion, you got to take the shot when you can. But yeah. He's fighting for the title way too early. You know what I mean? He, again, could you, Zito and I talked about this. He could be, use a couple more fight seasoning, but in this culture, you know, you kind of got to get the shot, take the shot when you can. And it comes early for some guys, especially in a thin division.
And here's the funny thing. I mean, you got these guys. I mean, they're getting title shots, we say, too early. But look who they're facing. I mean, if they were facing, you know, a different – if Klitschko wasn't there, then they'll be facing essentially each other or another champion, probably not of that stature. Probably somebody,
you know,
I would say, a little more beatable.
And I was going to say, that's kind of my point with Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury – has now beaten Derek Chisora twice, who's a former title contender. He's beaten Stevie Cunningham, who's a three-time cruiserweight champion. He's had some pretty impressive wins. But who does he fight that prepares him for the champion? You know what I mean? Like, there's such a gulf in skill right now between the top of the mountain, Vladimir Klitschko, and between, you know, the second or the third guy. And because there's such, you know, a difference in skill, it really is.
Well,
you know, it's no one who can really prepare you for that level.
Hey, guys.
They want to bring that big Bulgarian. Into this country. Maybe fight Tyson Fury or Wilder.
Hey, guys, we're joined by a guy who can answer questions like that, a man who stepped up to the plate many times, Mr. Edner Terry. Edner, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, Frank?
We're doing
great. Hey, Edner.
Great.
Hey, how you doing?
You know, Edner, we were talking offline there, and I think there's news you want to give us.
Yes, sir. I'm getting back in the mix. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully in March, you know what I'm saying, I'll be back in the ring. But I don't have a date yet, and you know, well, that's what we're getting prepared for. So you know, just putting the work in. And hopefully in March, you know, I'll be ready. Whoever they put in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're waiting some other news. Do you think you could share with us next week what that big news is?
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, next week. You know what I'm saying, I could put it on, so you know, let the fans know, and you know what's going on next week, and you know, go ahead and give the good news, and you know, I'm very excited, and you know, so right now I just want to hold on before I open my mouth and say anything. So, you know, that's about it, man.
But you know, Edner, when you were in Philadelphia for your last fight, was there anything changed in the time while you were there?
Nah. Nah, no, sir. Not really. But you know, it seems like everything was the same. But nah, not at all.
How about any announcements prior to or after the fight?
Not really. But after that fight, you know, it just, you know, I was just waiting for another fight, and you know, just try to get some good news. But after that, it wasn't really nothing, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't any good word or any good news. It just was like go back to the gym and work out and just waiting for something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were –
Have you been getting any sparring in?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I mean, this I think this was my third week of sparring. And, you know, I sparred today. And it's going pretty good, man. And you know, just getting back into it and getting back in shape. You know, just try to get ready for March.
That's great. And how many rounds when you spar in the afternoon? How many rounds do you usually get in?
Oh, just like last week Saturday, I got in like six rounds in. You know, today it was four rounds because from round one, we just was going at it from round one because, you know what I'm saying, today I was planning to go eight. From round one, we were just in a war. Like, we were going at it. So Dan said, man, you don't need an eight round of this right here. So he said, so it was, I mean, people was like, man, that was, man, y'all was going at it, man. You know, they were saying, man, that's something that people need to pay for to watch. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but, you know, it just, you know, as, you know, right now I try to do about 6 to 8 rounds. And, you know, as fights start getting close, you know, I want to put like what it depends on how many rounds I'm fighting. I want to at least put a 10 in, and you know what I'm saying, a 10 or 12. You know what I'm saying? But I try to keep it to 6 to 8 rounds, you know, 6 to 8 rounds, you know, and 9, whatever, you know. So
now, before you, during the time before you fight, will it, will you increase your sparring round, I should say?
Yeah. Normally, what like how I want to do it is like normally when I first start in spar, whatever, like workout, I normally try to put more in and try to put the hard work in, and you know then you know as you know when it's almost camp is over with, I don't want to be doing the last 10-12 rounds. I want to do everything early, try to put the hard work in, and you know then like you know the last couple weeks is like what's the use? You know what I'm saying? Just let's cruise it and let's. That's where stuff start happening. Start getting cut. Start getting injured. This and that. So I'd rather put my hard work in early. You know what I'm saying? The last 2 weeks, whatever. Come on, man. Let's, you know, I'm saying these last 2 weeks. If you're not in shape by then, man, I don't know what to say.
Hey, Edna, how you doing? This is Todd.
Hey, how you doing, man?
How's your family?
Family's doing great.
Good. That's good to hear. Let me ask you a question. At this stage of your career, you've been in the game for quite some time. What more do you feel that you can learn, even technically, fundamentally, as far as training? What do you feel you still can learn or are learning?
You know what? I'm in a position right now that I need to learn everything. You know what I'm saying? I need to learn everything. It's like, boxing, you never stop learning, you know what I'm saying? Even with your jab, like going in there, working on everything. I need to learn everything, like, you know what I'm saying? Just like a newcomer, you know what I'm saying? I got a lot of room to improve, you know what I'm saying? And, just like how people say, well, Edna, you've been in the game for a long time. You know how you have a young 20-something-year-old, but like you have that young old fighter, then you have that old fighter, but he's young, a young 32-year-old. That's me, you know what I'm saying? Because I haven't put myself in a war like it's like I'm shot, whatever. You have these young fighters like they about shot it, but in their 20s, whatever, in their 20s, they're like, man, that's they about done, you know what I'm saying? Then you have that young 32. Like, he will be, you know what I'm saying, he can fight as, he's 18 or 20, you know what I'm saying? That's me. I'm a young, 30, you know what I'm saying, 30-year-old, and, you know what I'm saying, I haven't been in the war. I haven't put myself into that, you know what I'm saying? I got many more years, you know what I'm saying, to battle.
Yeah, that is true. You still are a very fresh 32. And you know what, and you've been in the ring with Bradley and Paulie Malignaggi, and you know, unfortunately, you didn't come out on the winning end. But those were two guys who just smacked you more so than punched you hard, huh?
Yes, sir. See, you know what I'm saying? That's what's the good thing about then. Even I tell myself, I was glad I didn't win that title from Timothy Bradley because then I'd probably be fighting a true welterweight. I mean, you know what I'm saying, 140 pounds. You know what I'm saying, then I'll be. You know what I'm saying? Then I'll be risking my career. So it's like, wow. You know what I'm saying? But for real, it's like you fight a little guy fighting these big old guys, and it's like, man. Then at the end of the day, man, it's like you getting punched drunk. You find a big guy.
It's one thing fighting a big guy who can't punch as opposed to a big guy who's a puncher, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. See? You know what I'm saying? So you like, you know what I'm saying? You got some true 140-pounders could punch, and you got some 140-pounders. Can't punch, you know what I'm saying, when I fought Timothy Bradley. He can't punch, but he stayed busy. Paulie, he boxed, run, but he can't break an egg, you know what I'm saying, break an egg, but he can't punch. So just imagine these two fights I was in, just imagine there was some punches. man. Just them two fights, man. I would have been like, man, I'm done, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying. But I'm glad I wasn't with a true welter. You know what I'm saying. With some punchers. You know what I'm saying. That would have been like kind of slow me down because fighting for 12 rounds, getting punched hard, man. I can't.
Edner, who's the guy who was the hardest puncher you ever faced? Not by record, but personally, the guy that hit you the hardest.
I don't even know. Being honest, I don't even really. You know what I'm saying? It's like some fights I got caught, they dropped me, and it's like, God, dog, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, in my career, I've been dropped. But it's like you try to find out who hit hard, like, man, like, oh, shoot, what I put myself into. But it just getting caught, you know what I'm saying? But I can't say, I don't even know, being honest. But, you know, everyone that I fought had a little popping in on, you know what I'm saying?
Mm. Hey, Edner, now that you're with Dan, and the way he's got you trained now, the way he's got you tuned up, if you were to have those two fights over again,
do you think you would win them? Yes, because right now, because the reason why I'll say yes, look at Keith. When Keith first started, then y'all know about Keith. Now, from the first time Keith has started until you see Keith right now, now he's a totally boxer. You know what I'm saying? He could go in and box, and he don't have to slug. So now that's what Dan is having me doing, boxing and stay. It'll go and stay busy and keep that jab going. But it's when I fought Timothy Brad, it's like, God, dog, what? I need direction. I need info. What I need to do? You know what I'm saying? But now with Dan, he's a smart fighter. You know what I'm saying? You have a lot of coaches could coach, but you don't have coaches that can teach. You know what I'm saying? But you know, Dan is like, Coach Dan, he teach. You know what I'm saying? He's trying to make sure you a smart fighter. You know what I'm saying? So just like what he did with Keith, and then I'm finding myself even like sparring like last week, whatever. So, man, Edna, you like your boxing skill, your feet, man. You got good feet moving, man. Dan is bringing me back into my boxing where I don't have to slug all the time, where I could just box, keep that distance going. You know what I'm saying? Fight from a distance. You know what I'm saying? So, yes.
Yeah, your former style was to get in the ring and just beat the hell out of somebody until you couldn't anymore. And now since you've been with Dan, it seems like it's slow and go, short and fast, but get the job done. And I know I've seen the change in you. And I know everybody else has. And I want to say, you know, I think that's a great thing you did. Making that change.
It's funny. Zito and I were at the show in Philadelphia your last fight. And, you know, we both have watched you for years. We were always fans. And one thing about you, I think one thing we appreciated, is you were one guy who always seemed humble and nice, but when you got in the ring, you always fought your opponent as if he just like, shot your dog or something. You kind of get this look on your face, and you just, like, go bombs away. And so we had heard, you had talked to us about how Dan had been working with you, be more patient and to use your jab. And so we saw you in your last fight. You came out, and obviously we knew the guy was going to be a southpaw. And it was nice to see you in that first round be patient and use your jab and try to engage him. But it seemed like the second round, the moment you were able to read him, you were the cherry bomb again. You were the same guy who as soon as you got your beat on him, you didn't lose your killer instinct is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So you're right. And, you know, if you look at the boxing world, people go out there and try to – it's like – it seems like they hate one another. You know what I'm saying? But for me, that's not me because – I know what I'm doing this boxing for because the other guy have family, but you know what I'm saying. Like at the same time, the guy tried, on the other hand, he wanted to try to do what he had to do. You know what I'm saying? Win or knock me out. But this is boxing. You know what I'm saying? But let's do it the right way. Just let's go and have a good time without hatingness, without hating. You know what I'm saying? But then after the fight, let's have a good time. Let's be humble about it. This is boxing. But now these days, like. You got people have beef with one another, and hey, I want to kill you, I want to eat you, and hey, I want to kill you. You know what I'm saying? But just remember, these other guys have family too, man. But you know what I'm saying? For me, man, I love this sport. I love to go in there and just, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going in there to destroy, but I'm there to just going to win, because that's how I take it, my family, and I love this sport. And you know, it just I'm humble. I'm humble in the, you know, outside the ring, and you know when I step in there, it's something different. It's like, man, hey, this is my job. I'm saying just like every type of job that people have. Hey, I'm serious about my job. Then when my job is done, when I'm on the outside, hey, I'm humble. Hey, I'm a good person. You know what I'm saying, however you want to put it. You know what I'm saying, treat people right. And, you know, when it's boxing time, that's a job. You know what I'm saying? I'm at work right now. I got to get it done.
Hey, Edna, you mentioned Keith and you know, his development. We all know Keith has a, you know, very stern test coming up in Robert Guerrero, the Ghost, very soon. Tell us what is threatening about Guerrero. What, you know, if you also being close to Keith and working with Keith, would you say Keith has to watch out for, and what Keith needs to do to come out victorious tonight?
Man, you know what? I'm not just saying it just because me and Keith in the same gym. Even if I wasn't training with Dan Birmingham, Keith is a smart fighter, because just, you know, the people who don't know Keith, they're you know what I'm saying, they might say negative things about him, or he might go in there try to do, but he is smart. He's a smart fighter, and then that night believe me, I think Guerrero will have a hard time, and he will. Then Guerrero will really say, "Man, what did I put myself into?" Just remember, Keith can box, Keith can hit, and
yeah.
So putting them two packages together, then you know what I'm saying, he have good foot movement, and even when you think that he's there for you to hit him, then he's not there. You know what I'm saying? He's like, God, dog, he's quick. You know what I'm saying? But, man, but that night, you know what I'm saying, it'll be a good fight. Then Guerrero will see what's in front of him, man. You know, he's a, like, the only thing I would say, Keith is a smart fighter.
Great. And I'm pretty sure Keith's been getting a lot of softball sparring.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Are you guys doing anything special to prepare for Guerrero's known roughhouse tactics, so to speak?
No, not really. No, sir. No, sir.
Well, Edgar, we appreciate you giving us your time. We know you're training, and I know that you have if you have some time next week, I'll give you a call. And so I know there's a huge announcement that you want to make. And we've been dying to let out for the last 3 weeks, but we're keep that like we said to Dan, we'll keep that under wraps until everything, all the dots are done. Or all the I's are dotted and the T's are dotted, or crossed.
So yeah, yes, sir.
We want to thank you again for your time, and say hello to Elizabeth and the kids, and give them all a big hug for us.
Okay, will do.
Okay, thanks a lot, Edner.
Take it easy, Edner.
All right,
take
you
care, Edner.
All right.
We're going to have, next week, we're going to have another good friend of ours come on, Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen. And everybody knows that he's a fun
Kid
interview.
Kid Chocolate is about to he's about to fight Andy Lee to get his title back, the title that he vacated.
Yeah, that's going to be entertaining.
Boy, oh boy, we got some questions for the chocolate one.
That's for sure. Chris, what do you think?
Well, first of all, you're talking Quillen, the middleweight from Brooklyn, the champion?
Yes. Former
he
champion.
Lost. I didn't even know he lost.
No, he didn't lose. He vacated. He chose not to fight Matt Korobov. He decided to vacate the title. Andy Lee ended up fighting Matt Korobov, knocked Korobov out, and now Peter Quillen is about to fight Andy Lee. Just signed to fight Andy Lee.
Oh. Is he fighting? Is he going to be fight at 160, or is he going to fight at 68?
No, 60. It's for the middleweight title. For Peter Quillen, it's the former middleweight title. Yeah, at 60.
Yes. Okay.
They're going to fight on the
April
11th.
I thought he was a damn good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
What did he vacate the title for? I don't even understand that. What was his reason?
It was a business decision, but I guess we can really even get it straight from the chocolate's mouth next week.
Yeah, he was involved with a couple other guys in a major business deal, and he was actually not only almost the president and CEO of the corporation that they were forming, and he was doing all the negotiations, so he didn't have time to train and do all that at the same time, train for a fight, still training every day, but didn't have enough.
I also read it was a very lucrative deal, too, that he was working on. So,
yeah,
I did read that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Surprises me.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I haven't heard a word from Provotnikov since he lost to that tall welterweight. What was his name?
Chris Algieri.
What happened to him?
He ended up going over to Russia and fighting, if you guys remember, Jose Luis Castillo, formerly known as the real Jose Luis Castillo. So he ended up fighting Jose Luis Castillo in Russia, and he stopped him in like five or eight rounds. And then Zito, you were about to say, but that's the fight he just had. He's actually coming off a win.
There were negotiations about Provotnikov fighting Lucas Matisse.
That fight looks like it's getting close to being done.
Yeah.
They better have some blood at the ringside, some blood plasma. What a war. Jesus Christ. Two guys with heads like stone and punch like mules. Well, that'd be some fight. That's a Graziano-Zale fight right there, man.
You know, it's funny. I just mentioned Jose Luis Castillo because he just lost to Provotnikov. He obviously had no reason even really being in the ring at this stage of his career. But remember his wars with Diego Corrales. That's what this kind of reminds me of for some reason.
Mm. Yeah, that was a war, wasn't it? That was a Gatti-type fight. That'd be one of the all-time great fights. You'll be seeing that 10 years from now, that war. But Provotnikov and Matisse, I hope they don't lose the films because they lost the films of Graziano-Zale. They misplaced the films, and nobody's ever been able to see the fight again. The only one they have is the ring, the third one, which Zale knocked him out in about four rounds. That's after they took the title away from Graziano because he was a deserter during the war. He punched his captain and then ran. He was nuts. He hit his captain, and the captain told him to do something.
The captain.
Graziano knocked him out and then ran away because they were going to put him in jail, and he was fighting. He was fighting while he was, they didn't even really, in those days, the war was going on, and they weren't looking for him, really. And when they found him, they disbarred him, took the title away. But that was a crazy era. But they did lose both fights. Everybody's sick about it, you know, in those days anyway. But they don't have a – I've never seen a rerun of the Willie Pep Sadler second fight.
Dr. Chris, what was the best fight or maybe the top three fights that you've ever seen?
All right. You just talking about rough and tumble?
Yes, rough and tumble.
A combination of rough and tumble.
You know, rough and tumble at the highest level, though.
And it can't beat Donald Poon and Sister Claire.
Wow.
Sister Sandra.
Well, all right, if you go – let me think back to the wars.
But, I mean, between high-level guys.
I'm going to say one of the greatest fights of a rough and tumble fight was DeMarco Basilio. That would be one. Then I'm going to have to rank Frazier and Ali, number one, the number one fight. Frazier took inhuman punishment that night and damn near killed him.
You mean the first fight in the Garden?
The first
fight.
That was a great, great, great fight. That was one of the greatest tests of human endurance I've ever seen.
Wow.
You know? And Frazier gave every ounce of his body into that fight, and he won, but he took an awful beat. Oh, my God. He was in a hospital in Philly. He broke down so much protein in that fight, his kidneys almost shut down and killed him. He had a lot of problems after that fight. That was a test of human endurance. That's one of the greats. I saw films of the original, when I was a little kid, of the original Graziano-Zale fight. That was a war. And then they lost the film. And that only went six or seven rounds. The first fight, Graziano was killing Zale, and Zale knocked him out. In the second fight, it was a reverse. You know? Graziano was Zale was, I mean, they were just, you know, I'm going out of the ring, Ali, you and me, let's see who can hit each other the hardest. Of course, you got to go to some of the Gatti fights when you think about it. Walcott Marciano was a great fight. The first one. I mean, Walcott peppered Graziano with some bombs. You could hear them punches at ringside. I mean, he thumped him with some awful, god awful body shots. And Rock, I thought he would crumble, but he hung in there and eventually won the fight. I mean, I've seen some damn good ones. I'd have to put them, even the guy from Detroit,
Hearns,
the trainer from Detroit, that Ed Hearns. Remember the guy that had Hearns?
Stewart. Yeah, Manuel Stewart.
Manuel Stewart constantly brought up the Basilio DeMarco fights. Constantly. He thought they were one of the greatest. And then, of course, you know, for a short fight, Hagler Hearns. How much action did you see in a couple of rounds of that fight? Wow. I mean, that goes up there. You know,
what
but,
about
I mean,
Lyle and Foreman?
That was a clown. That was a clown fight. They actually booed. They booed.
Bumbling boxer, right?
They booed Foreman when he came to Philly. He got mad. They introduced him after that fight. He got mad. They booed him. He wasn't really popular in Philly, and for some reason. And I was down at the Spectre when they booed him. He was hot. But that was just a barroom brawl, you know. I don't know. I mean, back and forth where you saw what each man was made of, you're going to have to go back, like I say. There's been some great fights, one-sided ones, but I'm talking back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
You know, I mean, I saw them all. I'm going back to right after the war and right during the war. I was a little boy, but I watched all the fights with my dad. You know, if you want to go back to the Dempsey era, they were about just on a level with the MMA here. I mean, the quadrangle. I mean, they fought like that. I mean, those fights, they had no rules.
Brutal.
There was no rules when Dempsey fought. He did whatever he wanted to do. The refs got the hell out of the way and just let him go till they kill one another and see who was going to die first. I mean, when he fought Firpo, the bull of the Pampas from Argentina, Firpo's hands are at least double the size of Marciano's. His hands are bigger than Bronco Nagurski's hands, the biggest pair of hands I ever saw. And that was a war. He had never been off his feet. But he hit Dempsey in the back of the head. He didn't punch him. He clobbered him, you know, like a block falling on your head. Knocked him out of the ring. He fell through the ropes, fell on top of all the reporters. They stuffed him back in the ring. And there was 14 seconds went by. I mean, before they you talk about it was something. He got up, and then Dempsey proceeded to kill him, but they were killing each other. That's one of the great old wars, I mean. Firpo and Dempsey. And then there's the mangling of Jess Willard by Firpo. I mean, by Dempsey. Did you ever see that fight?
No, I haven't.
You never saw Dempsey Willard?
No. Yeah, I saw it.
He broke 12 bones in his
feet. Oh, Dempsey Willard. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, there were rumors. For the longest time, there were rumors that he had his hands wrapped. But I heard that wasn't true.
I don't believe that. What was happening when he did knock Willard down.
As soon as you came to one knee.
Well, when you got up to one knee, you were allowed to hit a guy.
Yeah.
So the poor guy would get up, boom, 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 he's hitting him in the face with all these. And he was a wicked puncher. He broke about 12 bones in his face.
He
broke his maxilla. He broke the zygomatic arch on both sides, knocked teeth out, broke. My son said, man, he was boxing in the air. I'm glad they got rid of that rule. Where as soon as a guy gets the one knee, you can hit him.
Yeah, he killed you.
I said, well, they were the old days. They were the old days. But I've over the years, I'm not going to say the modern fighters that haven't had some wars. I've seen some wars, and you just mentioned Castillo and the tall, thin guy.
Corrales.
Yeah, well, that was a great fight. That was a great fight.
Yeah,
that was a great fight. Your fights with Gaddy and Mickey Ward, they go down in history.
Yeah,
they go down in history. But I think potentially one that's just as good as if Matisse fights Provotnikov.
Quite possibly.
Take the referee out of the ring. Don't even let the referee in the ring. Can you imagine that? They would be punching each other on the floor.
Sure.
That's going to be one. Okay, get in there and fight, but we're not going to put a ref in there with you. Christ, that'd be a bloodbath. You know? Joe Louis never had any wars. Joe Louis, as great as he was, never had any wars where he got hit. You know, he might have got nicked a couple of times and went down, but he was up quick. But they were never wars. They were always one-sided victories.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray never had any real wars. He never had any real wars. It was either he outboxed you. He was smart. He wasn't going to go toe-to-toe with anybody. He's going to win the easy way he could. He didn't go for those wars, man. That's why he looked so good most of his life.
And he hit hard, too. So he's not a guy you could just run up on either. Yeah,
no, you didn't. Even LaMotta, when Sugar Ray would move into LaMotta, LaMotta would back up. LaMotta didn't hesitate to go low and back up against Sugar Ray. Sugar Ray
LaMotta had a wonderful jab. A wonderful jab against Sugar Ray.
Yep. Yep. They were that was a great fight, Sugar Ray and LaMotta. LaMotta just simply ran out of gas. He couldn't make the middleweight. He was the number one contender for about 8 years in the middleweight division. He couldn't make 160 anymore. And they didn't let you fight. They didn't let you weigh in 2 days in advance. Well, LaMotta would put him in the ring at 175.
And there was no 168 at that time either. So.
No. You either fought as a middleweight or you fought as a light heavy. It was a 15-pound difference.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of great 165-pound fighters. 168. They were too big for the middleweights, too small for the big light heavyweights. There was a lot of great ones. Georgie Benton. A lot of them. There was a lot of them. I'm going to tell you a guy that Giardello fought. Henry, I'm trying, what a puncher he was. Weighed 165, could knock the head off an elephant, you know? but they were never big enough. You know, you get a guy like Bob Foster, 6'3", 175 pounds, they just couldn't go with anybody that big. That was a big difference. But I think the purest, I said this the other night, I was talking to a fight fan, the purest boxer, one of the purest boxers I've ever seen was Harold Johnson out of Philadelphia. He could go, he fought a guy, he fought him right before Ali was a young, small heavyweight when he first came up. He fought this guy that Howard Johnson fought. Howard Johnson won all 15 rounds. It went 15 rounds, and Howard Johnson didn't even get hit with a jab. And then this guy gave Ali, in about his 10th fight, life or death.
And this guy was a light heavyweight. I forget his name, too. He was a light heavyweight. He was a small guy that gave Ali all
small guy.
Yeah.
He gave Ali a fit.
Yeah, I forget his name. Light heavyweight. A light heavyweight.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of his name. I can see the
start something. I think.
Huh?
I can see his face right now. Can't think of his name, but he gave Ali fits. And I'm thinking, well, how good was Howard Johnson? When he was in his prime, he had brutal light heavyweights in there. There was Archie Moore. You know, Ezra Charles, when he was coming up, Ezra Charles was still a light heavyweight. And then he when Lewis vacated the title, Charles won it. And but there was a lot of tough light heavyweights around. I mean, you know what? They never really have given you a count on how many fighters are in this country. But licensed fighters in the 40s, there was like 15,000 of them, fighters, licensed. That's a lot of damn fighters, you know?
Yeah.
Now I'll bet you there aren't – how many licensed pro fighters do you think there are in this country?
Maybe the same.
Not too many. Not too many. Probably most of the bulk of them are Mexicans, you know?
Yeah, or Europeans. There's 15,000. There's 15,000, but there are 5,000 Mexicans and 5,000 East Europeans. So.
Yeah, right. Well, worldwide, it's worldwide now, you know. By the way, our buddy's fighting Canelo, the redhead.
They're fighting James Kirkland.
When's that coming? You know what? Kirkland's got a good chance of powdering him, man. You don't know who.
That's May.
If Kirkland shows up with all his
2nd.
Talents, look out.
Yeah.
When is it?
If Ann Wolf is training him, Dr. Chris, then uh-oh.
That's a bad opponent to fight, man. He can either kill you or look like a bum. You never know who's going to show up with Kirkland. But he can punch. I thought Canelo was going to fight the guy that won the middleweight title. The little guy.
Miguel Cotto.
From Puerto Rico. I thought that was his next fight.
Yeah,
so
Miguel Cotto never responded to the offer. He just decided to go another route. So.
Oh, well, I was in Puerto Rico. They were talking about it. I thought that'd be an interesting fight. So he's going to take Kirkland. Well, when that woman was training Kirkland, he was brutal. And then he left her for a fight, and he got knocked out.
Yeah.
And then he went back with her.
Yeah. So
you know,
I think if she's training him, he has a good chance, maybe.
Yeah. She's got his number. She knows how to handle him.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a good chance. Canelo, I really that's going to be some fight. That could turn into a war, you know.
Yeah, it could.
It's going to be a war. I think it's going to be a war. It's going to be up to Canelo to control the pace of the war.
Yeah, because Kirkland moves in. Kirkland doesn't take too many backward steps.
And boy, he fights 3 minutes of every round very intensely.
Yep.
And he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
And he doesn't. And his stamina, if you were just to judge by what you've seen, his stamina is far superior to Canelo's.
Yep. Yep. Providing he's in shape, and that woman will get him in shape.
She's a mean son of a gun, isn't she?
She's a mean son of a gun.
You know, he's very vulnerable early in the fight. But it seems like once he's warmed up, man, he's almost unstoppable.
That's right. You're right. I got a lot of respect for that Kirkland. I think he's one hell of a fighter. You know, I'll tell you what. It wouldn't surprise me that the odds are going to be very close on that fight. I don't think Canelo will be that big a favorite. Maybe just a little bit. 2-1,
and I think
the odds are gonna
translate more to where the fan thinks of boxing, because I think Canelo is gonna be a little higher favorite than he actually should be, to where boxing insiders are gonna be more or less.
I agree.
He shouldn't be that high.
I wouldn't put my money on it.
I think also the odds will change once Boxing Insiders find out whether Ann Wolf is training him. If Ann Wolf is training him, watch more insiders start to lean towards a Kirkland. So,
well, they'll go to the gym and they'll watch. You'll get the reporters at the gym watching them train, and when they see him training, how impressive he's going to be, they're going to cut them odds down. They're not there to give money away.
He'll always come in shape, but Ann Wolf has him in a different type of conditioning with a different type of mentality. And I mean, if she's gotten a hold of him to train, then I think boxing insiders will, you know, not that they'll favor Kirkland, but I think you'll see the odds start to reflect the insiders' knowledge of what Ann Wolf does for Kirkland.
And my
they did it.
My only concern with Kirkland is his he hasn't consistently been in the ring like Canelo. He hasn't consistently been facing that sort of competition that Canelo has. And that mm-hmm. used to be important.
And Zito, you know what? It's funny because without Ann Wolf, specifically because of that, I would give him not a great chance. Because he hasn't been in the ring consistently, he's been out for like 13 months now. You know, I would say if he doesn't have Ann Wolf, given those factors, he has a very little chance. I think with Ann Wolf, it, you know, obviously I think it enhances his chances a bit.
Well, they did a show on like testing punching power. That Ann Wolf can hit as hard as a man.
Oh yeah, well,
they tested her punching power. She's so damn mean, man. She's a mean son. She'll knock your damn head off. Don't go after her. Don't flirt with her. Get out of town, man. They were testing her punching power. I couldn't believe it. I go, whoa. Jesus, God, and then I'm thinking Kirkland left her, and I said, well, I didn't know what was going to happen, and bam, he got knocked right out. He took, you know, because she works him hard. She does all the strength exercises with him. She makes him flip tires around and do all the, I mean, she's a great trainer.
And you know what, she also makes him live a certain way while he's training with her, and that's one of the reasons why he left, because she was too strict, he said, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, you're getting ready for a night, not a waltz.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and, you know, he's a guy who, if he has too much time, he gets himself in trouble. And so she demands that he stays focused and stays out of trouble. And, it gets a little repressive. It got a little repressive for him. But he instantly saw the benefits of our training, like you said, when he got dropped.
Great.
Yeah, you're right. She knows you fighters, you got to be on top of them. You got to watch them. When Marty trains a fighter, Marty Feldman, he lives with him. He cooks for him. He don't even let them eat their own food. He cooks. He wants to know what they're eating and what they're doing. You know, when Carmen Graziano had fighters, they lived at Vineland. They came over there and they lived there, and he watched them like a hawk. Because you don't know what they're going to do. And Leon Spinks, he had a bodyguard 24 hours a day. He used to jump out the motel windows to get the keys and get in the car. He didn't know you weren't allowed down a one-way street, you know? He'd drive all over, get locked up. He was a damn problem. But you got to stay on top of those fighters. There's so much at stake, you know? Giardello played cards every night, right through the night, would get up in the morning and drive up to the Poconos without sleeping. He did that for 4 days. The fifth day, he fell asleep at the wheel, hit a tree, and broke his leg.
Wow.
Because Carmen, he didn't want to stay up in the Poconos. It was boring up there, he said. He couldn't play cards. So, I mean, and I saw his contract. I was shocked. He was supposed to fight Olsen before he broke his leg. And the contract, that's just $585,000 for Giardello's end of. That's a lot of money in the 50s.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, that was a lot of money, and he threw it all away. And then it took him 3 more years before he got a title shot. And that was against Dick Tiger. That was that's not a bargain. Fighting Dick Tiger wasn't a bargain. And then he had a 6-month clause. He had to give a Tiger a rematch in 6 months. And he lost a rematch. But, 500 and some thousand. That was a lot of money. I was shocked. Carmen, he would turn white when he looked at the contract 30 years later. He'd turn white. I mean, he would get a sickly look in his face, you know, because he needed the money, his end, real bad, you know.
Sure.
And he said, damn, Joey, I thought, man, Joey's going to train for this fight. You know, he's up early. He actually woke Carmen up in the morning. Carmen thought he was really going to. But when I went down to spar with him, he played cards all morning. He wouldn't spar. 2 or 3 times I went down there, I got nervous. I was just a young kid. And he's playing cards on the floor, you know. So you got to really watch a fighter. You when you send him out that door at 5 o'clock, if you don't know where he's going, you don't know who's going to show up that night. you know. Unless I like to hear this guy that you had on tonight, Agner. He, Cherry, what's the name?
Yeah.
He seems like he's a clean living guy and doesn't get himself into trouble.
No, I can vouch for Edner for sure. He and his wife Elizabeth, his wife has had some major health problems, and his two of his kids have had major health problems. But the guy
wow.
is in the gym. He works hard. He lives good, clean living. In fact, he goes to church three times a week. Just
Whoa.
A tremendous man.
Whoa.
Whoa. Yeah, he's a good family
wow.
friend. But, well, guys, we're up against our time limit here, so we're going to have to.
All right.
As much as I don't want to.
Anybody fighting tonight? Frank, anybody fighting tonight?
No, I don't think so, Chris. Is there? Ty?
Nope, Chris, we're off until February 21st when your buddy Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, steps in the ring.
Great.
Okay.
28th, yeah.
So no
All right.
fights today.
Well, we'll have to wait a couple more weeks for a good fight. All right,
yep.
guys, I'll see you next week.
Oh, hey,
All
Chris.
Right, take
it easy, Dr. Chris. Hey, Chris.
Care, Dr.
Bye,
Chris.
Guys.
Chris?
All right.
Next week we're going to have David Feldman on, too. That's a personal friend of Chris's. Marty's son, David, is going to be on with us. He has a show tonight at the 2300 arena
good.
Down in South Philly.
Great arena. Great arena for a fight.
Yep. Z, you want to lead us out?
Sure. Do. I want to thank Edner. Yeah, Edner,
I know
wish him good luck. I want to thank Dr. Chris. Always good to talk to Dr. Chris. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Hey. Yeah, we definitely thank Edner the Cherry Bomb Cherry for joining us. As usual,
yes,
sir. Great to talk to you, Butch, Zito, and Dr. Chris. We wish everyone a great week. Bob is our co-pilot.
Great. I want to thank both you guys for being here each and every week. Dr. Chris is always, when he's with us, always brings some lefty to the program, as well as his doctor's historian. Edner has always been a good interview. We love to talk to him. We love to be with him both here on the show and in person. Talk about a gentleman. You can talk about a better gentleman outside the ring. Don't want to be in the ring with him, but a gentleman, a great family man. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women, police and fire service. When you're out there and you see someone in uniform, just a simple thank you, a good look, a smile, means a lot to everybody in uniform. Just remember, we're the guys that are running it, the people have to run it. These programs are also dedicated to those obliged to cost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Polkett, Sergeant Thomas Grayson, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazman, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Randy Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Handler, Lieutenant Mike Zerlin, Bethlehem County Police, Patrolman and Officer Crispin Lakeland, DHPD, Deputy Barbara Fell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longo Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ward, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth County, PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charles County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida, Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Firefighter Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, and the Patrolman Charlie Condon, Tarpon Springs Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your field. and the sun shine lightly on your feet until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your family whole and hallow of his hand.
Good night. Sona shen vorat fen akuir gen maer ma
thank you.
miss you. We love you.